This is a new voice for a new Scotland.
Welcome to the Indie Prem podcast on Independence Live Radio. My guest today is Christian Allard, who is currently a councillor at Aberdeen. Past experience has been a member of the European Parliament and also a member of the Scottish Parliament for the SNP. Very good day to you, Christian.
Bonjour, Christian.
Very pleased to meet you. What I'd first like to ask you is, what brought you to Scotland initially?
Not by accident or anything else. To answer in a few words, I would say freedom of movement is what brought me to Scotland, because without freedom of movement, I don't think the company I worked for at the time would have opened an office in Glasgow, and I don't think I would have moved to a country out with the EU to set up as a young 20-year-old. So very much is freedom of movement. It was for work. I came here to stay a couple of years, 2 or 3 years, set up a business for the company I worked for, and then leave maybe to Spain or to somewhere else to do the same thing again for the same company. And I didn't fall in love with Scotland first, to be truthful. I fell in love with my wife, and that was me, you know, 3 children and 4 grandchildren later. I'm still here.
Excellent. And how did you meet your wife?
Oh, in some of the pubs in Byers Road. I was in Glasgow at the time. I stayed in Aberdeen only for a month, and then I moved to Glasgow to open that office. And I stayed there for 8 years.
Now, you came originally from Dijon, which is well inland, and yet your interest was fisheries. How did that happen?
Indeed, it's a strange thing. I did say that to the Scottish Parliament. I'm from a farming background. In fact, my father was a chicken farmer. And I was fed up working out with school and during the holidays in the chicken farm. So I had a friend who was working in the seafood transport. So I said, I'll try that. So I announced to my father that from now on, I will be smelling fish instead of smelling the chicken farm. So it was quite amazing. And from then on, I left school quite early, and I kept going with that job. And slowly but surely, after a year in military service in Germany, I ended up in Scotland, more by chance. You know what life is, you never know. You try to tell that to your children and your grandchildren, by all means, have goals and try to think what you can do in your life. But most lives, you've no idea what's going to happen, and especially in the 20th century and now the 21st century. The world is really your oyster, and you can do whatever you want, and you've no idea what's going to be next. And that's great.
Yeah. So what got you interested in the first place in politics, and how did you get involved with the Scottish National Party?
Well, I moved to Aberdeen 25 years ago, and when I moved to Aberdeen, I worked in the fishing industry. I was not in haulage anymore. I was in export. And I got more and more involved with the local industry at local level, then at regional level, and then at national level. And I had more and more meetings on the future of our industry, especially between the offshore sector and the onshore sector. And slowly but surely, my children were just grown up. I had more time in my hands. I could have decided to start playing golf instead. I said, I think it was a good time in politics at the time. I recognized the SNP was very close to fishing and always is. So I was very much attracted by the SNP on the values and et cetera. And when I realized that it was in 2005, something like this, I realized that the SNP could make a difference, and independence would be something we could see in the future. So I used my spare time and I said, okay, let's do this. Let's be an activist. And I just signed up to be a member and an activist. I never thought, but it's more coincidence and yeah, events happen one after another where I ended up. But, you know, it's more a question of when somebody asks who wants to do this, but it's always an idiot to put his hands up. And most of the time it was the Frenchman who put his hand up. And I ended up being an organizer, a campaign manager, and all the rest of it. And helping people to stand for election, of course, that was a drive as well. It was not only on the independence, it was the democratic process. I think, you know, I come from a country, and Leslie Riddock, you know, loves that idea of local democracy, where people are a lot more involved in local democracy. I come from a country who's got so many, much involvement at local level, elected members at local level. I really push people to do that. I thought there were a lack of that, you know, local democracy, that neighborhood kind of democracy in Scotland. And I use that very often as, in fact, I put my name forward to be candidates, more to show the others. If you're asking yourself why a Frenchman is standing for election, you're asking yourself the wrong question. You should ask yourself why you are not standing for election. I think that was more the idea at the start. So I pushed a lot of people to become candidate, and I was quite successful to get one or two elected.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I'd certainly like to come back on the on your political career, but just focusing just now as a councillor. A council is the last front of delivery for government decisions. How do you feel that? I'm in an area where it's Conservative and Liberal Democrat run the council. And there's a lot of feelings of that much of the things that they do is really to maybe make the Scottish government look bad in poor delivery. How do you feel that experience is widespread in Scotland, where councils are not run by the SNP?
Yeah, I don't know if I'll make a political statement, but I'll more talk about local. You know, you talk about local authorities. I like to talk about local government. I think local government is a real term because they are as equal to Scottish government and UK government, and they have to make decisions, real decisions every day of what should be done, how it should be done. But the political administration, the political opposition, we're in opposition just now in Aberdeen, and you've got the civil servant. So, you know, you've got the same mixture when you have at UK, European, and Scottish level. So you have that. And from then on, you have a certain responsibility to do this thing in partnership with other governments. And that works better in places than in other places. And yes, you would say that it's easier when the different governments are the same color because they will work better together. Yes and no. Sometimes for democracy, it's not a bad idea to have people from different colors holding different level of governments. And it can be done, it works very well. You know, I think local governments don't look like one another. If you look at the map of Scotland, you'll see that a great variety of local governments of different colors and of mixture as well, which is great. You know, a lot of them are coalition anyway. But they all have their own ethos. So you can't say that a SNP local government is the same as another SNP local government a few hundred miles away because they are very different. Because it's not only the political nature of the local government, it's more a kind of ethos. And we get back in Aberdeen City. Aberdeen City is very different from Aberdeenshire or West next to it. And it doesn't matter which political color either have them out. They are different because we've got a different history, we've got a different way of doing things. They've got a different setup. So you have to respect the rest things. So there need to be a lot of respect both ways for it to work. I think the Scottish government under the SNP has done quite well over the years, the last 12 years, to make it work. You know, but it's not that it needs to be willing on both parts. I'll give you an example, which may be politician. It's when Aberdeen City Council and the Labour and Conservative decided to leave COSLA. That was absolutely a silly idea. You know, you need to work in partnership. If you can't work in partnership with your other local authorities, how can you work in partnership with the Scottish Government or with Community Council? Let's not forget, there is another level. There is Community Council as well. And I'm a bit disappointed that we've not managed to encourage people to come into Community Council. So a great appeal that we do today is to ask people to sign up to join Community Council, because it's where democracy, it's important. There are, you know, Scottish Government, SNP Government has given some statutory right and powers to Community Council. Community Council need to take them and need to take them forward. And it's like that we can work that kind of Scotland that we want, something that Leslie Ruddock talk about very often, you know, something I'm used to in France, a more local democracy.
Yeah, very interesting. They hadn't considered the local council side of things, and I think a lot of listeners would be intrigued to consider that point as well, because it's something that is usually overlooked. You were a member of the European Parliament for a very short time. What was that experience like? Because I understand you were on the Green European Free Alliance group, and the committees were fisheries and delegation to the EU-Russia Parliamentary Cooperation Committee. What was your experience?
I have to give a disclaimer already. You know, I've never been to any meeting about Russia Federation. I've nothing to declare.
Nothing to declare.
There's no need to do
Das Vidania.
An investigation to know what's my link with Mr. Putin, because I didn't go to any meetings. The reason I didn't go to any meetings, the likelihood that we will come out of the European Union was quite high. So in a short time that we were in European Parliament, we had to prioritize and making sure that was important. So, you know, they say international relation with, you know, other countries out with the European Union was not our priority, and nor should it be. You know, our priority was to represent Scotland in a very difficult time in the EU and to gain as many friends as possible in the EU. And I think we've done that in the short period that we have. And of course, all our colleagues have done that before. You know, we've got a great history of the SNP involvement at the heart of the European Union, you know, starting with Madame Ecosse, of course, who's been fantastic and still very much remembered in both in Brussels and Strasbourg. So yes, it was a very emotional moment. It was a difficult one. We had a very difficult job to do. I think we did it. I think we had a good team, a very good team, and we worked very well. We worked very well with the people in our own groups. We get a lot of support from the Green IFA group, which is a group we've been together, I think, since 1999, so for a long time. So I think it's been a very, very interesting way. I remember Alan Smith saying that when we came in for that last little stint at the European Parliament, he found a difference compared to the years. He'd been there a long time. He found a difference. And the difference was that a lot of UK, a member of European Parliament, were a lot warmer towards us. I think there were an understanding at last from all the UK, not the Green, of course, because the Green always had that understanding, but the others as well, a great understanding that, you know, the SNP not only had a great result and was pro-European and et cetera, but there were no infighting. We were all working together. And that was good. Even the Conservative, and the Conservative were pro-European, who moved towards the trend, of course, and to be against the EU, we still had good communications, even if we disagreed. And I have to say, you know, if you look at the six elected members, it was a great diversity. We had Baroness Mubarak, who was elected for the Conservatives. We had Anne Smith, we had Amy MacLeod, of course, myself, you know, another lady for the Lib Dem, Sheila. So we were three men, three women, and of course, once Alan got away, we had an extra woman than men in the six, and we had Louis, fantastic Louis for the Brexit party. And why it's fantastic? Because it's very topical just now when you see Black Lives Matter. Having somebody from the BAME community, a black man representing Scotland, but representing the Brexit Party for Scotland, really showed the rest of the EU where we are, you know. And that was great. And we did fantastic, in fact, because he fell out with Nigel Farage and then left the party because he realized that the values of the party were not his values, even if he was still, and he still is for Brexit. He knew how to draw the line. And I think the six of us did a good job. The three of us in the SNP and Alan moving at the last minute to let Heather coming in was great. And, you know, community work, you know, we all did a fantastic job at community work. I can, you know, my colleagues is the same. I can talk about the Fisheries Committee, Pesh Committee I was at. There were no context, the other British MEP and Scottish MEP were not there. I don't remember. You know, she was a full member, Baroness Mubarak. I don't remember her speaking at the PESH committee for the 7 months we were there. Wow. She came from time to time, voted once or twice, but she was not regular there. I should have finished the speech. No. I remember my team always said, okay, I will tell them before I enter the committee meeting, because, you know, it's a large venue, there's a lot of members. I said, I'll try to refrain from speaking. Of course, each time I was one of the biggest contributor during the meeting, even about things that, you know, were interesting. But yeah, it's so important, You're elected, whatever parliament, a council anywhere else, you need to make that contribution, and it's important to do so. So it was a great experience, you know, and let's go back as soon as we can.
Absolutely. Now, obviously, if we look back at the referendum in 2016 and 38% voted against, they voted to leave in Scotland. Now we look at the figures that are produced by Progress Scotland, by Agus Robertson's organisation, shows a similar figure of 8% as what the current polls of 8% of people who voted for independence in 2014 now would vote against independence because of the EU vote, because they voted they wanted to leave. How do we get the message through to those people?
It's you know, unfortunately, the best way to get the message is to go from doors to doors, and we can't do that just now because of the pandemic. But we need to be a lot better at listening. We need to be a lot better at encouraging people to see where we are at. You know, I think we need to refrain from saying, I told you so. In the fishing industry, I've been very, very careful to take people with us and to understand why they voted for Brexit, to understand why other people voted for no, for independence, and still want to vote no. I think we need to understand this, you know. So we need to do a lot of listening and understanding and take it from there. So polls are what they are. A good indication of where we are. But I still think, in my mind, I'm doing all the door-to-door campaigning that I've done. I've never stopped, apart from the pandemic. You could see that the vast majority of people, whatever they voted in 2014 or whatever they voted in the Brexit vote, don't know what they're going to vote this time. You know, it's not sure. They've not made up their mind. They will tell you today, oh, I'm going to vote yes to independence. If you come the following day, they might say, I'm going to vote no. So, you know, there is no, it's not set yet, I think, in most people's minds. Of course, there is always the ones like ourselves who know exactly what we want, how we want it. We are quite confident to vote yes. I think there's a lot of people in the middle, a lot of people who are less political, who understand very well what's happening, who will wait to make their mind up for sure at the last minute. And we need to understand that. You know, there is no way, and it doesn't help trying to tell people, tell me now if you're going to vote yes for independence when we're going to have a referendum. I don't think that makes any sense at all. So we need to be more confident of what we want to do. A lot of listening, a lot of understanding. And then, you know, it will happen what will happen. But we're in a lot better position than we were in 2012, 2013, there is no question. So yes, we need to be optimistic, and I'm always in an optimistic mind. But it's not one, it's never one. You know, we really need to work very, very hard at it.
Because the questions that were asked then, they're still going to be valid into the future when the referendum, we do eventually get a referendum, and that's the usual ones of the economy and the currency. So what more can we do? Because there has been statements, obviously, from Nicola Sturgeon that there will be a Scotland-only picture and not looking just at the GERS figures, but looking at the real potential for an independent Scotland.
Yeah, you know, our vision of independence has been clear. You know, we were very, very clear in 2014. We really give a very good vision. Some part of the Yes movement give an adapted version of an independent Scotland. So there were a lot of vision out there of what independent Scotland could be, and a lot of it was complementary. Some went further, some went less further, some was more staged, you know. So there were a lot of talk. I don't know if we need to change whatever we said about the vision of an independent Scotland. You know, it is what it is. You know, we've not changed our mind since 2014. To a certain extent, all of us who had a vision, and it could be different, of an independent Scotland in 2014, still have the same kind of vision and has been proved right by what happened since 2014. So there is no very good reason to change, because the movement is there towards yes, and our vision is holding on. You know, it's very much the no campaign arguments, which have all sank one after another. You know, our vision and independent Scotland, it shows you the polls, it shows you the result of the SNP as to the years. Now, of course, there is always a bit of refreshment to do and some new things coming in. For example, you know, the UK leaving the EU. That's something, even if we had a plan for this, we had planned for this, and we had talked about it in 2014. That's something different. How to deal with the pandemic, that's something interesting. You know, citizen universal income, that's another interesting thing to have. And of course, well-being, which goes very well with the pandemic, but the idea of well-being is very interesting. So if you want to change something, I would maybe push more on that well-being issue. I think it goes very well with the pandemic. I don't know if the universal citizen income would have had been so popular in 2014. I don't know if the well-being idea would have been so popular in 2014. I think it is now. So yes, you can add that to that kind of vision that we have.
Because it's become part of the conversation now, just like independence. Yes. Independence has been spoken about, and then it's become more normal. Universal basic income has been spoken about more generally now. It was unfamiliar to people in the past, so it'll become normal. Things that I would like to see, as far as not only being a member of the SNP, but also being a member of the Yes movement, is talk about central bank, talk about a constitution, the possibilities there, to give more meat on the bone, that when I'm knocking a door and having a conversation with someone, I've got more information to give more confidence to someone to have that ambition to think, yes, I'm going to seriously consider voting yes in the future.
The thing for the central bank, for example, the Scottish government already started. So there are things which have been started since 2014. So it'd be easier to say that started. And that really came forward. I don't think we should attach ourselves too much into that will definitely happen at that time. You know, that's up to the government of an independent Scotland to decide what we're going to do, how we're going to do it. You know, so you can talk about the vision, you know, talking about the timetable or talking about what's going to happen at what time is difficult, and particularly difficult. And we saw that in 2014, when something you want to do will need to have the partnership with some government that you will not power on, you know, something about the EU, something about London, or about anything else. You know, it's all very well to say it's what I want to do, but you look always at the case to say, ah, yes, but for you to do that, you need to convince other people that is the right thing to do, which you don't automatically have the power. And that's totally normal. That's the way every government works all the time. That's not because Scotland is becoming independent that this decision would have not been taken, you know, they would have been taken in London or somewhere else. So all this decision, I think the decision-making process is not something we should spend too much time on. We can talk about it, but I don't think it's something we should, and I don't think it's what people want to hear. You know, we don't want to hear what's going to happen at this time, what's going to, because we know, you know, things don't happen that way. As far as we understand that we fall them through, I think, and again, you can give the example of what the Brexiters did. We didn't think anything through. As far as you can prove to them that you put it through, without telling them automatically what your outcome will be, because you don't know, because yeah, that's going to be a decision-making, that's going to be partnership with other people. But as far as you tell them where you want to be, how are you going to get there, and what's your direction, I think people will be happy with that. I after what we saw the last few years,
terrible.
I think, you know, they know it comes from a competent point of view with people who understand how these things work.
So why, know, I don't that Christian, why, when we see how incompetent the Conservative government is in Westminster, why are there so many people in the Aberdeenshire area still vote Tory?
I again, do they really vote Tory? You know, they voted, and if you remember, they voted for David Cameron and for Ruth Davidson at the time. Then slowly but surely, even when Boris arrived in, that was Brexit. So some of them had voted for Brexit. Some, you know, so electorate don't follow automatically of what's happening. You know, you've got to let them time to think their way through. I had a lot of people saying that. Remainers. And others, people who never voted Tory before, telling me, come on, give Boris a chance. You know, it's human, you know, it's not, you have to understand, it's again part of the understanding. We need to understand how the electorate think about this through. So they wanted to give Boris Johnson a chance. They had voted Conservative before. They voted less Conservative, absolutely, as a solution. You know, a lot of seats went down, but we still voted a little bit Conservative. We lost one of the seats. You know, we could have won it. We were 700 votes behind, so not a lot. In the fishing area, you can understand that people are still desperate for that, a proper organized Brexit to happen, even if we know it's not going to happen. So I'm not too worried about that. And that doesn't mean that Aberdeenshire or Aberdeen won't vote for independence. I do think there is a lot there for us to go door to doors and to get them understanding that vision. Again, if you take that example of the pandemic and the well-being and supporting people who need it the most, when you are in Aberdeen where the price of oil have collapsed, when you're going to have so many people who are in trouble. You know, I've got one of my daughters who works in the oil and gas industry. You know, she doesn't know yet if she's going to have a job in the next few months. So all that's going to crystallize, and people are going to start to understand. You know, farmers are starting to understand. The penny has dropped for many farmers. Fishermen, the penny will drop. Fish merchants, the penny has dropped already. So, you know, it takes time for all these things to happen. But, you know, I'm convinced that in the next few months, you know, people are already thinking about it. Even if I'm telling you, you know, I've not changed my mind, I was still vote no. Somehow we understand, there's somewhere we understand that things have changed and we are not like they were in 2014.
Yeah, because it's one thing for people to be affected, and it's normally change doesn't occur until someone has a personal effect, whether it's their within their family, whether it's their lifestyle, whether it's their occupation, that they do wake up politically and realise, as you say, use your expression, the penny drops.
And quantify that. It's not, you know, I don't want people to lose their job. It's like I said, I don't want my daughter to lose her job. And I don't think that's a good thing to happen. And I don't want it to happen. But I think that the idea that it could happen and the idea of the pandemic as well, these two things together really show people that voting no in 2014 didn't provide the security that they thought it would. And suddenly, if we come, as we are coming, with competence during a pandemic, a good vision about how to look after people better, like other countries do, people who are unemployed or in a time of a pandemic, then I think is where you win them over, or they win themselves over, because I don't think you can convince anybody to vote for independence. I think it's more people. Journey from no to yes happen with themselves. It's themselves who slowly but surely.
Slowly but surely is solid.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the only thing that always niggles me is the fact that people do not, especially, for example, with 2021 approaching the general election, not fully appreciating that the Scottish Government is doing everything with its arm behind its back, because it doesn't have full control of all the economic levers and taxation powers to be actually able to run the country. And they're looking upon the Scottish Government as though it's independent now, and it isn't.
But on the other hand, we want them to look at the Scottish Government as an independent government. And we want them to feel like we live in an independent country. And I know it's difficult. And I found that dilemma myself when I watch the news every day. We all wish that the Scottish Government could do a lot more in a different things. But when you look at it, you discover that they're doing already a lot of things that they might not have to, or they might not do at all. Maybe they're not allowed to do. We've got a minister for immigration, we've got a minister for energy. All these things are reserved. So, yep. So we talk the talk and we walk the walk. Unfortunately, we can't run yet as an independent country, because as much as we want to portray ourselves as an independent nation and having a government who looks like a government of an independent nation, we do realize that we are not. So it's a dilemma. It's an everyday dilemma, especially when decisions have to be taken with the time, and we see that during the pandemic, you know, the decision taking in Cardiff, in Belfast, in Edinburgh, and in London are very different. So that's interesting. I like to talk about that. I think it's important as well to give it a UK context. I've seen, for example, a lot of people saying, we should have an extension for Brexit, because only England agreed to not have an extension when Northern Ireland, Wales and Scotland all agreed to have an extension. I think that's false. I think nobody, no nation agreed to have an extension. The democratic deficit is that England didn't have a voice. There is no English parliament to decide these things. So we had three voices, and we have one who didn't have a voice. England as a nation didn't pronounce itself to say if they wanted an extension for Brexit or not. So, you know, we all have to realize our limitation in Scotland. And it appears more and more the nation who's got the most limitation in this United Kingdom is England, and it's more and more prevalent now.
Because Michael Barnier was talking, was it very recently, that they would be open to discussions of Scotland being a continuation of a transition if Westminster agreed, but there's no hope of that, is there?
I like what you call him, Michael. I do call it Michel.
Sorry. Michel, sorry.
And of course, I spend a lot of time, I had a good conversation with Michel Barnier, because it's important that we have. I've been a bit cheeky with him with some discussion I am, trying to push him a lot further than he can ever do. And he's always very pleasant. And he would say, Christian, you know, There are things I can do, there are things I can't do. But I do think that the way the EU head of states are, they are very warm to an independent Scotland. They do understand the Scottish dimension. They do understand how much, and we can see it during the pandemic. They can see a Scottish government who knows what it's doing and a UK government who has no idea what they're doing.
Christian, why didn't they do that in 2013, 2014?
They couldn't.
I know they couldn't, but they couldn't. They need. I've always felt that they needn't have taken such a pro-UK stance. And they could have stopped, for example, Rajoy and his comments and various other comments that were going on against blocking Scottish membership if it did vote for independence.
The UK government and the UK media portrayed the EU as being on their side. Now, the EU was never wanted to take part of us, you know, never wanted to say that Scotland should be independent or not. But as the UK is a member state, they cannot interfere with what's happening. We have the same problem in Spain, we've got the same problem with other areas. You know, it's what the Brexiters always complain about the EU, saying, oh, you supersede member states, and you decide what's happening in every country. They don't, you know, the EU doesn't do that. They don't do that in Spain, we get in Catalonia. They didn't do that.
Does that disappoint you? Because
you no, not at all, because it's the kind of EU I want. You know, I want to be an independent Scotland in the EU. I don't want to go from a union where we have no say to another union where I'm going to lose the say that I have.
Yeah.
You know, it's very, very important that we keep our sovereignty inside the EU. And you have to recognize that. If you don't recognize that, then you don't understand how the EU works. And maybe you think that the EU is what Monsieur Farage said it was, but it was never. and it's not meant to be. You know, there are some people who are thinking that now the UK is leaving the EU, the EU will maybe become more centralized, more federalist. I don't think it will. You know, there are some voices very federalist in the European Parliament. There is no will whatsoever from the head of states or from the major bloc in the European Parliament to have a more centralised or federalist Europe. Never was.
Is there any changes you would like to see?
Yeah, of course, yes. It's like what we talked about earlier on, you know, government and organisation and local government or UK government or Scottish government or the EU. I have to make decisions all the time. So, you know, but I change all the time, but I change all the time. So you need to do the challenges. So I've got one of the challenges, which is a strange one. People will, especially in the time we are living just now, I found we spend a bit too much time in the European Parliament at pointing fingers at other countries across the world. And that annoys me. You know, I'm used to being in the Scottish Parliament where we don't like pointing the finger all over the world. We're a bit like the Scandinavian nations, and I hope that when we're independent, we'll be exactly like that, which means not trying to give lessons to everybody in the world. It's maybe our past colonialism from Britain and France and other countries and Germany and Belgium and all these, and Portugal and Spain and others who makes us do that. Our relationship with China, with Africa, even with America, sometimes it's a bit too much finger pointing. I don't like that. I'm never comfortable with that. And when I participate in debates way about finger pointed, I very quickly pointing the finger back at myself. Yeah. and explain that, you know, the UK, we definitely not there as we should be. And even Scotland, and we talk about racism, but we talk just now, you know, there is an awakening for a lot of people, but Scotland is not immune from racism. It's not immune from fascism. It's not immune from this thing. So instead of pointing the fingers always at other countries, like some parliaments likes to do, and the EU Parliament for me is too much about that, spend too much time on that. I think we should be more interested about ourselves.
Because you were the subject of a racialist abuse earlier this year when you were told to go back to where you came from. How did you feel about the the riots in Glasgow from the British nationalists.
And I codify that. I always talk about xenophobic when you're talking, when it's not racist, but it's more on a national basis. The life of being people, black and ethnic minorities in Scotland, in the UK, and in a lot of other countries, America, France, and others, is absolutely not the kind of life as EU national, even living in a different time, which is Brexit, are living just now. Even if some attacks have happened, you know, some vandalism has happened and some things happen. But what's happening in London, for example, or that extreme right coming out. And I have to point that out, you know, people who are keep on beating the same drum that people from the extreme right and fascist and others are only coming out in the street to respond to communist and anarchist. You know, this is a load of nonsense. There is no, you know, extreme left to anarchist to communist in our streets. That's the language of the fascist and the extreme right and the populist have used over the years. You know, we are taking over democracy because it's under attack. This is not true. And I'm afraid that this protect the monument thing is very much the kind of thing. And I think it panned out very, very well when in most places, and it was not extreme left, and it was not anarchist, and it was not communist, it was normal people. It was us who were making genuine, a peaceful protest. I think it played very well, but we didn't give the extreme right, the fascist and the racist and the xenophobic and others the excuse to be there. And am I surprised? No, Scotland is not immune. UK definitely not, to Brexit, what happened. Political parties, I'm not blaming the media. I like to blame the politicians first and foremost. You know, it's Labour Party who voted, who was selling at the conferences that mug, you know, against immigration, control of immigration. It was £5, I think, or £4 or £5 for the mug, a Labour mug against immigration. And then Theresa May since 2010, and now, of course, Boris Johnson. And, you know, Cameron had a lot to answer for. Cameron took his party out of the mainstream of central right in the European Parliament into the far right. You know, Cameron played the game of the far right. So there is no surprise also where we are. You know, these people, politicians like Boris Johnson, David Cameron, Theresa May, and others before them of other political parties have all beaten the same drum. So, of course, you know, you ended up too.
Then the media doesn't help. And, for example, after the riots in Glasgow, if that had been an independence movement, all of the newspapers would have been absolutely front page cover. It would have been the news for the next week. The only newspaper showing any front page big story about the riots was the National. All the others, the Express, the Mail, the Record, and the rest of them, no, it's not even the peer there. The BBC, it's at the bottom of a page as a small item.
It's the way media works. And we're talking about the electorate early on and saying how slow the electorate move from one direction to another one. I think, you know, the media is the same. You know, owners of the media and editorial change. At the same time, I will really, and I say that in the SNP meeting, in the YES meetings, look at the media from a different angle. Sometimes we have preconceived idea that the media is always against us, and we don't look. You know, I remember a time when the media was a lot more against us, but it is now. You know, I see, for example, Alex Massey, who's writing for The Spectator. You know, what he says is great stuff. I'm surprised to agree to a lot of things he says. You know, Piers Morgan, crying out loud. and so there is a backlash, and we need to I'm not saying we need to be friends with people, but we need to to understand where we agree with them and where the attitude are changing. So when attitude change in the media, in journalists, and in the electorate at large, we need to help them towards that change, as opposed to saying, ah, you're only saying that, which doesn't help. You know, we really need to understand that. And I have no problem with the media. As I said, you know, do not blame the media. Blame the politicians. And we've seen it. We've seen it in Scotland. The media in Scotland is a lot less worse than down south. And the reason it is because, generally speaking, especially before Brexit, all political parties in the Scottish Parliament did agree on a social, progressive country. You know, even the Conservatives do. So, of course, the media, and especially the printed press, had to have a very different editorial and front page that they had in London. And that worked very well. Unfortunately for Brexit, it doesn't work so well. But I think, you know, we're all saying we're not immune, but I think we're in a better place of having a better media maybe than they have themselves, hopefully.
2021 is coming. Obviously, a lot of people now are discussing the aspect of independence being in the manifesto as a plan B. Others saying that, no, it should be a majority of yes. Others saying, no, we should be looking at the actual numbers between parties that put independence in the manifesto if we don't get a Section 30. And obviously there's the case that's going through the Scottish courts at the moment, the people versus the UK government and others, which is fighting the case that we don't require a Section 30 to have a legal referendum. What passage do you see that going, Christian?
Well, you know, it's a bit like we talked earlier on about, you know, what's going to happen after independence. You know, we can't make a timetable until things happen in front of us. You know, Nicola Sturgeon was very, very clear. The SNP was very clear. We wanted an independence referendum at the end of this year, before the end of this year. Now, until somebody tells me it's impossible, I'll still work with us. Now, 2021... Yes, we're supposed to have a Scottish election, and I encourage everybody to stand in Scottish election, especially women, especially BAME women. We need to have a lot more ethnic minority, especially black minority in our parliament, because we've got none, and we have none so far. We've got some from a different ethnic background, but not from the black minority. So that would be important, especially women. We really need women. So I would encourage everybody to stand for the Scottish election and for the local council, and of course for community council, as I said earlier. But I think, you know, people have to understand that we should stand. Will I stand? You know, most of the time I put my hand up just to push other people to stand. So I might do the same again. But I don't know yet if we're going to have an election in 2021. We're not sure that. We're absolutely not sure. So we've been for some years now in the unknown, which is, you know, interesting on one hand, challenging on the other hand. And on the other hand, and I feel sorry for businesses and other people who have to project the 5, 10 years and 15 years because, you know, the constitution set up as, you know, we've not sorted that out yet one way or another. And because of the pandemic, you know, will the 2021 election will happen? I don't know. I wrote already an article about that, and I was to write about the declaration of Arbroath. And I did think that having it a referendum for independence in April to commemorate the declaration of Arbroath would be a good way to go about it. So if we can't do it at the end of this year, my preference will be April 2021 to have a referendum on independence, because like everybody else, you know, we all want it as soon as possible. Because what we want and what's going to happen is another thing, and we need to understand that. But yes, whatever happens to the Scottish election next year, and if we don't get a referendum at the end of this year, I would love to have a referendum on independence in April 2021, because it will be before the end line for people like myself who have to apply to stay in the EU. So we'll have the EU citizen on our side, hopefully. And I think it would make sense, you know, closer that we do to the to the UK exiting the EU, if the UK exits the EU, we have exited, but, you know, the deal is not made yet, but it's still a call. We'll know shortly. Maybe it's time that the program comes out. We'll know by then. But there's still a lot of things to happen. So that will be my preference. You know, whatever happened, you know, I'm not going to say. I don't think I'm clashing with anybody when I'm saying that. I think most people will agree with something similar. But of course, you know, we'll have to deal with what's happening in the next few months and deal with it well.
Do you think we will go over a cliff edge?
I remember having a conversation for the campaign for a nuclear disarmament because I'm a member of the CND, when Donald Trump came into power. And after listening for a three-quarter of an hour of discussion about what Donald Trump's going to do, you know, which country is going to invade and what he's going to do and et cetera, I put a halt to the discussion and I said, look, Donald Trump doesn't know what he's going to do next year, next month, next week, you know, tomorrow, even not the next, what he's going to tweet in the next 5 minutes. So I think it's a bit pointless to try to talk about what Donald Trump is going to do. And that has been proved right so far because, you know, it's been incredible. The thing he has done, he has not done. I think Boris Johnson is the same kind of guy. Mm-hmm. You know, there's absolutely no way of trying to second guess what Boris Johnson is going to do. You know, Boris Johnson is likely to give up on Scotland or Northern Ireland and even on Wales than it is to try to defend the Union till the end. You know, there are absolutely no way of trying to second guess what Boris Johnson is going to do. So we can spend time talking about that. I don't think we should spend too much time talking about that. And we should definitely not make plans about what we think Boris Johnson's going to do.
How soon after a yes vote for independence would we be able to join the EU?
I talked about that in the European Parliament in the last speeches that I made. And the idea would be to be in that transition period, that you're neither in or neither out. You know, you're in between. So everything applies to you until, you know, you're officially back in. So there is always that possibility. With willing partners, you know, you know, politics is not difficult when you've got willing partners.
Yeah.
You just have to find your where you agree and move that. So the EU will more or less agree with everything. So I don't think it'll be a big problem. Now, if it is a big problem, and you just never know, we can go to EFTA, we can join Norway and everything, you know. It's not our number one priority. I think staying in the EU or rejoining the EU as soon as possible, which we kind of staying because we would have a transition period when nothing changes, I think would make sense.
Right, Christian, one final message for the Yes movement, people listening throughout Scotland and all around the world in the live radio. What inspiring message would you give to people going forward? And possibly not so much for the Yes movement, for anyone who's undecided or had voted no in the past and they might consider yes now. What would be your message for them?
A message for people who are going to vote, because whatever they voted yes, whatever they voted no, whatever they voted I didn't vote on that one, remain or leave, I think people have to have an open mind and trust themselves. You know, I don't ask them to trust me. I ask them to trust themselves. You know, there is common sense in that. You know, what kind of country do you want? What kind of world do you want? You know, what kind of relationship do you want to have with the other countries? And, you know, I think you have to really look at what's good for your children, what's good for your grandchildren, and work from there. You know, then it's up to you. It's up to you to decide. Don't let anybody telling you should vote that way or the other way, me included. You know, I think everybody has got all the tools now. There is all the information out there. People who have lived the last 5 or 10 years as adults or as young adults will have a great understanding of how an independent country can work or can't work. Plenty of examples all across the world. New Zealand is a very good one just now. You know, so please don't make your mind up too quickly. Understand it. get a good understanding of it, then don't get too much affected of what your parents are saying, what your children are saying. Make your own mind up. You can't go wrong. If you make your own mind up, you cannot go wrong. If they can trust me on that, is to trust themselves, I think they can't go wrong. And please, you know, and that goes with everybody else, whatever they think about politics or whatever, please get engaged. You know, the last thing we'd want is not people not to get engaged. Go and vote. Stand, if you can, for election. And if you can't stand for whatever reason, medical reason or whatever reason, find somebody who can. It's so, so important that we get a great variety of politicians. You know, I don't want to see elites always in charge of the UK or in charge of an independent Scotland tomorrow. We need really the people to get more involved in the democratic process and to trust themselves to vote the way they should vote for what they want. And trust themselves sometimes to represent others and to stand for election.
Christian, that is superb. I would like to thank you very much on behalf of IndieLive.radio and wish you all the very best for the future. Thank you very much indeed.
Merci.
This is a new voice for a new Scotland.
IndieLive.radio.